Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to the Brain Injury Radio Network with shows 7 nights a week. You can find the network at braininjuryradio.com or look up Brain Injury Radio Network on Facebook. Another Fork in the Road with your host, Donna O'Donnell Fugerski.
Hi, and welcome to the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. My name is Donna O'Donnell Fugerski, and I'm your host on my show, Another Fork in the Road. My show airs on the first and third Sunday of every month at 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time. Another Fork in the Road is for anyone with a brain injury, anyone who is caring for a brain-injured person, or anyone with any interest in learning more about brain injury. I always say brain injury is not discriminating. It can happen to anyone, anytime, and anywhere. And I recently read some statistics where it says every 9 seconds someone in the United States is having a brain injury. That's like an incredible figure and kind of scary. But the Brain Trauma Foundation states that there are more than 5 million people in the United States living with some form of brain injury. But most folks do not even know about brain injury. They don't even know what it is. And I know that I never did, not until it came to live on my doorstep. On Another Fork in the Road, I try to raise awareness of brain injury and to help folks to understand what survivors and caregivers experience. On the third Sunday of each month, I interview brain injury survivors or caregivers to see how they traverse their world of brain injury. I host therapists, medical professionals, authors, and anyone to help gain insight into what they offer survivors. Then on each first Sunday of the month, I host a discussion panel to examine pertinent topics related to brain injury, such as depression, neurofatigue, anger, or various symptoms of brain injury. In tonight's show, we're going to be discussing emotional issues and the holidays after you've had a brain injury and how the holidays affect you. So we're going to talk about that, and we have Gail Wakin on in the green room here waiting to get on, and she'll be helping me go through the topic to see how people deal with things after that happens to them. For those of you who are new to my show, here's just a teeny snippet about me. I came on the brain injury scene in 2005 when my husband David had a brain injury. And you can learn more about that on my blog, SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com. I know that's really, really long. And this is the part of the show I always remember to tell my audience to please have pencil and paper ready so that you can jot down a URL, any URLs I might give you that you might want to check on after the show. I'll be saying that title often enough during the show, but I'll tell you it one more time. It's SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury. So you can check that out later. And like I said, I will be talking about that again, I'm sure. So I shared David's and my story in 4 episodes on this very show, Another Fork in the Road, in August of 2014 when I began my hosting on this Brain Injury Radio Network. And the last show that I did in 14 with David featured a discussion with him. So the first shows are my perspective of David's and my life after his brain injury. And the last show, I got David in on it and let him talk about what he felt and how how the brain injury has affected his life and my life from his perspective. So, and then in April 19 of 20, I had David on the show again because I wanted to share his perspective on his brain injury after that was 15 years. So now it's like 17 years ago. And because he was a retired professor of microbiology from Columbia University, I wanted to get his understanding of the COVID-19 pandemic because we were all so engrossed in and engulfed in that at that time. And he was able to take what the science notes and break them down into real people speak. And so we could understand it more easily. So anyhow, you can find all of my archived shows on my blog at, again, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. That's all one word and all lowercase. Although I don't think it makes a difference if you uppercase any letters. That's probably okay too. But just click on the air show menu tab under the category section on the right sidebar. It's really easy. If you want to know more about David, just type his name, Figurski, Figurski, in the search box on the right sidebar, and anything that David has contributed to the blog will come up, so you'll be able to find out anything you want to about him. You can also read our complete story in my book called Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale, which was published by Right Light Publishing, and it was released in November of 2018. So let's see, what are we on to? 4 years ago already. My goodness, that's getting older and older day by day. You can find Prisoners, as I so fondly call it, as a print book, as an ebook, or as an audiobook. And you can locate the book at any of your local book haunts, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, your local library, all your indie bookstores. And if they don't happen to have it, ask them to order it. They will, if you're going into your personal brick-and-mortar stores. But, of course, online, it's easy to get anytime. When you read it, please, please, please write a review on Amazon, for sure, Barnes & Noble, and Goodreads, if you can, because a review is a book's best friend. And it also helps to let others know about a good read, and it raises awareness of brain injury to other folks who might not know about it yet. You can also find out a lot more about me at my website, which is DonnaFigurski.com. And there you'll find lots and lots of things. Lots of things about my book, for sure. There's a whole page on the cast of characters. So as you're reading, you can take a peek at who said what and who did what, because their pictures are there. So if you're going to find my show tonight, fun and informative. And I hope that you'll visit the shows of the other hosts on the Brain Injury Radio Network. There are shows every night between 7 and 10 p.m. That's Pacific time. So you have to make your time zone translations across the nation. And because we are heard in every state across the United States and in 36 countries, there will be a lot more time zones to travel if you are listening in England or Africa or India or wherever you might be listening. So now sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's show. So tonight's show, as I said, is called Emotional Issues and the Holidays After You've Had a Brain Injury. So how do brain injury survivors and their families and caregivers deal with holiday time? Many of us are still feeling the side effects or the effects, I guess, of Thanksgiving, those bloated bellies, the travel weariness for many, and the family parties. And now more winter holidays, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, and New Year's are all right around the corner, just weeks away. And I'm already seeing parties going on in my neighborhood. I'm pretty sure that they're starting their festivities. So holidays are supposed to be fun, but they also include their share of stress and frustration. And that can be for anyone, not just brain injury survivors and their families, but anyone. and many extra responsibilities are thrust upon us. Buying presents, cooking special dinners, entertaining extended family members, and frolicking at the office or family parties are some of the things that have to be done with a smile. For those living with brain injury who just barely get in by their daily life, this time of year, and any holiday for that matter, can be a nightmare. The extra fuss and bother, the excitement, the parties, the noise can throw a person right off track. So how do folks with brain injury, an injury that has forever altered their lives, deal with all the happy, smiley faces around them? I mean, how hard is it to be a happy face when you're in pain, whether it be physical pain, which is what we think of mostly, or what about emotional pain? That happens a lot to people, and it's not easy. So on today's show, Another Fork in the Road, Emotional Issues and the Holidays After Brain Injury, we're going to talk about how folks deal with the holidays, and hopefully we'll even hear a few suggestions on how to make the holidays less overwhelming. And, you know, I don't have a brain injury, but I find the holidays overwhelming very often. It happens to a lot of people. You're busy in your life, and then all of a sudden you've got these extra responsibilities on you. So some friends from social media have agreed to share their thoughts and suggestions on this talk, and I'm really grateful to them. But before we get to any of their thoughts, which we're going to be discussing, I want to introduce my guest for tonight. And I know I said this is a panelist night, but unfortunately, and as I do, I think it's due to the holidays too, the panelists that were scheduled tonight, one fell ill and one was, you know, she was traveling up from Israel back home, and I think she's just overwhelmed with everything and on top of everything. Plus there are just various things that happened that didn't. So anyhow, Gail Waitkin, who has been a panelist on the show many times, stepped up at the last minute, and I'm really appreciative to her for doing that. So I want to tell you a little bit about Gail before we start. Gail is a survivor of multiple brain injuries, 12 to be exact. That's a lot of injuries to your brain. But most of Gail's injuries are sports related, and they happened throughout her life. Her most challenging brain injury happened in 2015, so only 7 years ago, when she was involved in a car accident and suffered a whiplash. And I know it's hard to believe that a whiplash can cause a brain injury, but it absolutely definitely can, and it does. And I know many survivors that entered the brain injury community with that same injury. And it's really a very difficult thing because all of a sudden, you know, everything's fine, you had a whiplash, there's no outward signs, but you have many issues that are happening within your brain to cause you distress. So in Gail's own words, she is, and I'm quoting this, an artist, educator, life strategist, and a TBI expert, unquote. And I think with 12 brain injuries and an extra one that we're going to talk about too, I think she can definitely be called an expert. Gail Waitkin is also the author of Heal Your TBI. And another book, Heal Their TBI. And these books can be downloaded free on Gail's website, healyourtbi.com. And I think there's another one that I'm going to ask Gail to tell me about because I never write this down when we talk about it and then I forget. So you can always learn more about Gail on my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. Find that search button on the right sidebar. Type her name to read her interview on survivors. Speak out. And as I mentioned earlier, she's been a panel on many shows, so her name will come up on various shows that we've had. And so you can listen to her sage advice on those shows too. So welcome, Gail. I'm so happy to have you here tonight.
Hi, Donna. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I'm really glad you're here. Because otherwise I'd be speaking to of the air all by myself. And it's so much more fun when I have someone to speak to. Anyhow, it's just like, wow, you know, where did this year go? It seems we just started 2022. And frankly, it seems like only yesterday that we were ringing in the new year. And here we are getting ready to say goodbye to it again. I think once we hit December and we're already into the first week of December, we start thinking of the new year and how and the new prospects that are coming up. So it just seems that time just seems to be flying by, and the holidays are here again, making more time pass by. Thanksgiving always seems to be the kickoff day for the beginning of the winter holidays. So here we go. And I just want to tell you a little bit about what David and I did on our Thanksgiving, because it was a little bit different this year. We spent our Thanksgiving with family. That wasn't different. And it was really very nice, and that wasn't different. And David is fine with being in larger crowds for a short time, but it can get overwhelming and exhausting if we overdo it. And I think a lot of brain injury survivors would be shaking their heads right now. Being in a large crowd, and I mean large crowd meaning 13 people, but that's still a pretty large crowd. It's much bigger than what you normally have in your home of just two of us and our pup. So it's something you have to consider. So one of the comfortable things for him is that he knows what to expect. But this year, our regular Thanksgiving host fell ill the day before Thanksgiving. She had the turkey all bought, the foods all ready to be made, and then all of a sudden she could not do it. She just zonked out totally. So fortunately, we couldn't have our Thanksgiving dinner outside at her house here in the desert, but we did have to regroup, and we went to another family member's home, one that is not as familiar to David. Now, he's been there before, but it's still just not as familiar, and familiarity means more comfort. So he was a little bit out of his comfort zone at that point. And so it caused him a bit of anxiety, but he shortly settled in and was fine. But still, it's always good to return home to familiarity and quiet. So when the afternoon is over, get in the car, and you know you're coming back home to, you know, just a very quiet, peaceful area. That always helps. But this year, David and I talked about how we can make the turkey holiday less stressful for him. And one big decision was to shorten our stay. Makes sense. Of course, we didn't just want to eat and run, because that would have been rude. We really wanted to enjoy our visit with our extended family members. We only see them a few times a year, so yeah, we wanted to take advantage of that. But we also had to consider how the event would affect David. David finds visiting exhausting. It requires that he speak. Now, if you've had a brain injury and and speaking is a part of your problem, you will know exactly what he's talking about. It requires him to speak and pay attention in order to take part in conversations. Now, because of David's face paralysis, talking is difficult for him. He has to take great care that he doesn't bite his lip or the inside of his cheek, and that takes a lot of energy and concentration, which makes you tired after a while. He also has to take extra care to enunciate his words so that he can be understood. Again, that takes enormous energy. If you've ever been to a foreign country and are trying to speak the language with the native speakers, you might get the gist of what I mean. Your mind is on high alert as you translate in your mind what the speaker is saying. Then, when it is your turn to speak, you have to carefully choose words and form complete thoughts. That's hard work. And I know, because I've been to Mexico. I lived in Mexico for five weeks and had only to speak Spanish there because the residents in the Pueblo, Mexico, do not speak English. Very few do. I also went to Spain some years ago, and this is what happened in Toledo. David was invited to give a scientific talk in Spain, and but not in Toledo, but in Spain. And we were traveling the country a little bit before we came home. And I was fortunate to be able to go with him at that time. So we were headed back to our hotel, but the street that we needed to travel to get to the hotel was closed because of a parade. Now, that was the only street that I knew that would take us to the hotel. Otherwise, I was sure to get us totally lost. And this, of course, was before GPS. So we were in a pickle. I knew some Spanish. As I said, I'd studied Spanish in Mexico. I'd also studied the language in high school and in college. But believe me, my competency was marginal. So anyhow, I jumped out of the car, and I approached the policeman with my broken Spanish. I attempted to explain our situation to him. In the middle of him, while he's directing traffic, here I am. Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't take me off, cart me off to the jail. But I remember how hard it was to retrieve the correct vocabulary to get my message across. I had to make him understand what I needed. I mean, it was desperate for that. And I know I murdered the tenses. And it's a wonder that the police officer figured out what I was saying at all. Fortunately for me, he did. And he helped us to safely get back to our hotel. But that experience gave me a good idea of how David and other survivors struggle to get their messages across to their listeners. It also made me realize how exhausting it can be to hold up your side of a conversation when you are floundering for each word. And I was floundering, believe me. I mean, I know some of the things. Yeah, I could say, hi, how are you? ¿Cómo estás? Muy bien, gracias, ¿y tú? You know, I could say all that kind of stuff. And I can also say a lot more than that. But I can't, you know, the words that you wouldn't normally say are going to be a little bit more difficult. So, the tension that I felt in just those few minutes with the police officer was stressful. Can you imagine what it must be like for survivors to deal with situations every day that mimic my struggles with the foreign language? So even a short time at a holiday event will definitely take its toll on David. Gail, I just wanted to know, I hope you didn't eat too much turkey as I did at Thanksgiving. I know it's 2 weeks away already. And it's all beginning a distant memory. But how was your turkey day?
Oh, my turkey day was a day of isolation, self-imposed, because I came back from a trip and I was ill. And I was fearful of giving my family a flu. I did not have COVID.
No.
I had tested for that. But I wasn't sure what I had. And it wasn't until the following day that I was able to see a doctor, and he told me I had a sinus infection. So I could have been with the family, but it was a quiet day, and I actually enjoyed it for all the reasons you just described.
Yeah,
so
I know, exactly.
It was my past.
Can you relate in any way to how difficult it can be to be sociable on a holiday affair like we, you know, like Thanksgiving? Oh, does that cause
you
any distress ever?
Absolutely, which is why I was happy to be home, because when you made the analogy about struggling with words, not knowing the language, and then asked the listener to think about doing that themselves, and it brought me to the thought that just the other day I was trying to explain to someone what it was like to struggle with my challenges. And, you know, I would invite everyone to think about, if you have to do that throughout the day consistently, you know, and as far as making decisions and just a simple thing like following a recipe or, I mean, just anything that our daily lives involve making decisions all the time. And whether we're speaking or acting and doing both. And I get exhausted, and it's nice to not have to worry about the pressure about being able to deliver a complete session, let's say, consistently.
Yeah.
But it wears you down throughout the day because it's always a battle. It's always a battle.
Mm-hmm. I know. And I see that with David every day. I think we don't talk in a lot of times during the day because I know that it's difficult for him. For example, our dinners, our meals are silent now. You know, they never used to be, but he was biting himself constantly. And he'd be eating dinner, we'd be talking, and all of a sudden I could see the pain on his face because he bit the inside of his cheek or he bit his tongue. Because of the paralysis, he doesn't have that control over his thing, over his face and his tongue and his mouth and his teeth. And so what happens is if he's not concentrating on eating every bite and biting, you know, making each bite, then it'll happen. He'll bite himself. And then you can just see the pain. And very often he tries to hide it from me, but not always. I can see it, you know, especially when it's really bad. And we thought, okay, something has to be done. This can't keep going on. And it took me a long time because I like to talk, you know. I always and when I have a thought, it has to come out. It's like a thought immediately, you know, is in the brain, comes out the mouth immediately, and that makes it difficult, you know, because David, we're trying not to talk. So it took me a long time. It took me months to finally get to the point where I don't talk during dinner. You know, and it's just a different thing. It's just something we have to do because of how hard it is for him. So it's, you know, so you understand that. And I know a lot of brain injury survivors do, but I'm not sure how many people who might be listening that don't have a brain injury or don't have somebody that they're living with that is having these issues, Dan, because it's like, really? I mean, come on, you can't talk and eat. It's like, you know, I can't walk and chew gum at the same time. Well, David can't talk and eat at the same time. You know, it just doesn't work. And so we kind of not do that. And, of course, if we're going out to dinner, like, for example, that Thanksgiving dinner we were at, he does have to talk. You know, people are addressing him, and they don't realize that it's going to cause him any problem. So he does, and he concentrates. But usually what happens is when we go out, he eats very, very little and then comes home and eats because he'll eat to be polite, you know, and but it's difficult, so he doesn't eat that much because if he has to do both, he can't. So, yeah, it's really a conundrum there, you know. So do you have anything more to say on that? Because I'm going to move on then.
No, I don't.
Okay, then. I just want to talk about, you know, the beginning of December. We're at the 4th of December right now, and December seems to have rolled in quietly after that. All of a sudden it was here, but soon the parties, you know, the meetups, the gatherings are all going to begin. I mentioned earlier that I saw some neighbors with lots of cars in front of their houses tonight as I took the pup for a walk. I think those are holiday parties beginning already, and they can be loud, and they can be raucous sometimes, which can cause havoc for survivors of brain injury. They can be a heck of a lot of fun for people who don't have to deal with that, but that's one of the issues that I was on. Rachel, who is a social media friend of mine, said, it can be so easy to feel overwhelmed. I'm quoting her now. It can be so easy to feel overwhelmed with questions, noise, and everything the holiday brings. But taking breaks really helps. And that's the end of her quote. And I just have to say that that is really good advice. She takes breaks if she's at a big party like that. Does that comment resonate with you, Gail?
Absolutely.
Do you ever have to do anything like that?
Oh, yes. And I think it's good. It's a good plan to make a plan. If you know where you're going, if you're familiar with the layout of the house, then you have an advantage in that regard because you can plan ahead. And I would say you need to tell someone, or if you're with someone who has a brain injury, you have to make a plan with them or encourage them to have a plan as to where they might go when they need some time. And that way the person with the brain injury feels comforted in knowing that they'll be understood when they disappear for a while. So you're not additionally stressed out because you feel a social obligation. And
right.
It gives you permission to be yourself and to get that break that you need. And if you don't know where you're going. Yeah, I think if you don't know where you're going, then I'm just assuming that, you know, people are going with someone with a brain injury,
mm-hmm.
or the person with the brain injury is being, you know, brought. And the conversation should happen before arriving that, you know,
mm-hmm.
you might need the time. And also, when you get there, you'll find a place, you know, that you could be found if you disappear. So, you know, go on a little,
yeah.
you know, hunt or something and find a corner
mm-hmm.
or wherever might be comfortable for a timeout.
Yeah, I totally understand that. You know, and the thing is, that this reminds me of a story that happened with, I don't know whether you know Deb Brandon. She's a panelist on my show here, and she's also the co-author of a book we're working on together. And she's told the story before. We have told it on the online, so I'm not telling stories out of school. But Deb and I went to the Tucson, Arizona Book Festival together to present our books and sign our books there. But Deb told me in advance. She said, Donna, if I start to get overwhelmed, you're going to see me look like a deer in the lights. You're going to see me start to lose control. She said, I could even cry, you know. And she let me be aware of all of that stuff so that if it happened to her, I was her safety net. And so, you know, it might not have happened, but in this case, it did. It was overwhelming. We were, you know, pulling our wagons down the big, large pathway to get to our book signing area. And we had already, you know, packed up the wagons, unpacked the car, all this kind of stuff, and had quite a distance to go. And then we had to start, unpacking everything at the gazebo that we were in. And I could see exactly what she said. I could see her eyes glazing over. I could see the deer in the headlight look. And she was near tears. And I just looked at her and I said, Deb, I've got it. Just go sit down, relax, take some breaths. And when you're better, come over. You can help again if you need to. Or just stay there until we're ready to go, you know? But that's exactly what you just said. Let somebody know. If you let somebody know, they can help you. They can be your safety net. But oftentimes, you know, people don't tell anybody, and then they get into this situation where they're overwhelmed, frustrated, and don't have help. And how scary is that? So yeah, the plan part for there, you know, have a meeting place, have a bedroom down the hall, or chair off in the backyard somewhere where, you know, you can just get away from the hustle bustle and the noise and all the party making going on. And just sometimes it just takes a little bit of time, but it's a good plan to have, you know, to make sure that you stay safe and can return without having a meltdown, because it can definitely happen.
It can. And I think that I wanted to add in, when you were saying that David, you know, being in this strange house, and you had
mm-hmm.
mentioned a number of people, a crowd of people, you had said, and however it was, a dozen people or so. And I thought
yeah.
at that moment in time, my word, for me, a crowd of people was three. So myself and you, Donna, and then your husband, that would be a crowd
uh-huh.
of people for me. Having to pay attention to two other people. So one-on-one
mm-hmm.
is great for me, but one with two or three or four is a huge crowd of people and can
yeah.
lead me to a point where I just will be silent.
Uh-huh.
You know, and find it very difficult to follow the conversation.
Yeah, because there are too many conversations going on. You know, and something like that. Like, for example, we have 13 people in that house, and there probably were at least six different conversations going on between people, all standing in the same room, you know, or even at dinner time, you know, two people here talking, two people there talking, three over here. Yeah, so it can become very unnerving with that. So those are things. And you know, when you have a plan for the, see, I never thought, Gail, that you would say, think a crowd was three. You know, to me, a crowd is a lot more. And so now you've just opened my eyes up a little bit to think about things like that, too. David's better on one-on-one, too. He prefers to have just one person he's talking to as opposed to a lot of people, two or three. Again, that's not that many, but, yeah, like it just makes a difference, though. You know, one-on-one, he can concentrate on what they're saying. If there are more people in it, it just gets to be a little, you know, tangled. Maybe that's what I want to say. So,
yeah, it's confusing. It can get confusing.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I can see
that. And one
of
the reasons it gets confusing is because this sensory input happens sometimes in a delayed manner, or it processes in a delayed manner. So what everyone might think was a simple conversation, for us, it's not that simple, because things land in our heads at different rates and then get processed through at a different rate.
Uh-huh.
And then our response comes out the way it does, which is sometimes very awkward.
So, yeah, of course it is. It can be. You know, and the thing is, that's what people don't get. That's what people don't understand. Because the brain isn't working at its normal rate as it did before brain injury. It's been affected in some ways. It's been damaged in some ways. And we never know quite, you know, where that damage is until you've had it and you're experiencing it. And then you know the things that have happened and to your brain just causing things to go wrong. So, yeah. And having... You know, loud, noisy parties is not conducive to a calm brain. I don't even think it's conducive to a calm brain for people without a brain injury, but it can be fun. It can be fun. But again, there are all kinds of noise levels at parties. You know, there's the lively party that has the rock music blaring and people dancing and laughing with abandon. I would imagine that a lot of people would have a hard time with that situation. I think that's probably the hardest situation to handle if a survivor is noise sensitive, as you just mentioned. There is also the more quiet, sedate party where there are many conversations going on all around. And it might be a one-on-one with a brain-injured person and somebody else. But there are also other conversations going on in the room which can be very distracting. So, and it seems that the quiet party would be doable, but still, the multi-conversations can get in the way. And then there's the restaurant situations are like that, too, where many meetups take place. So each table, you know, you're focused on their own conversations. And now, for something like this, I'm just saying, like, if you're going out with your – if David and I are going out, let's put it that way. If David and I are going out to a restaurant, and there are tables nearby, you might tune into their conversation and get lost in your own, your own situation. I don't see David doing that. And again, I'm going to say I don't have a brain injury, but I do that. I tune into the other conversations that are going on. I shouldn't, but it just happens. And so it can, but I know for a survivor that's having that problem, it can really put them off the track. And then too, a survivor with the issue of noise distraction or one that has PTSD can be seriously overwhelmed with these kinds of engagements and parties and things. So often, especially when the brain injury survivor does not look like they have a brain injury, it's hard for family members or friends to think there is anything wrong. Now, David, everybody knows that he has a brain injury. That doesn't mean that they know what he's going through. That doesn't mean they know that he has difficulty walking. They know that he has difficulty with his right arm because it's ataxic. But like an invisible brain injury, or like a person who is experiencing invisible brain injury, David has some of that too, because people can't know that he's having a problem chewing food or swallowing food or speaking. They don't know that about him because they can't see that. That's not something tangible to see. So that becomes a real problem for him too. And they can't see the wheels spinning out of control. And I'm not talking about David now. I'm talking about generally. They can't see the wheels spinning out of control in the brain of their survivor when the noise gets too loud. They can't see the chaos in the brain injury survivor's brain either when he or she is trying to focus on too many questions. And they don't know that it is completely impossible for their brain to discriminate between nonstop conversation going all on all around them. Imagine a kaleidoscope, never stopping long enough to figure out what the picture is. That might be a good description of a holiday party or a gathering for a survivor of a brain injury. You know, just always something moving, going, always in motion, whether it be the voices or the people moving. And that's a lot of stuff to have to sort through. So,
the smells, you know, the smells of the food. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all these different sensory inputs. Everything is magnified with someone with a brain injury, perhaps. I mean, we say, everyone experiences their brain injury differently, but there are commonalities.
Right.
And I think that I would encourage everyone to get prepared for the holiday season
uh-huh.
by getting a lot of rest, drinking a lot of water, making sure that you're staying away from inflammatory foods. You know, I mean, the holidays are loaded
mm-hmm.
with sugar, right? But
yeah.
sugar creates inflammation in the body, and a brain-injured brain is somewhat inflamed at times, and
mm-hmm.
we don't need to exacerbate that. But dark chocolate doesn't do that, so you can still have the dark chocolate. And, you know, but there are a lot of things that we can fortify our body with, you know, walnuts, the shape of our brain. I mean, walnuts are delicious if you don't have a nut allergy, and berries are good
mm-hmm.
and eggs and, you know, things like that to be fortified nutritionally before you head out to a party so that you're not tempted to eat, you know,
yeah.
or lots of the things that aren't good for you. And I think that that's a great strategy. I used to do that before whenever I would go to a party, not knowing what I was going to encounter, I would make sure I'd eat something
uh-huh.
good at home before I got there so I could then be cautious and considerate, and I could pick and not be loading up my plate because I'm ravenous, you know, and then eating something
yeah.
that I really wish I wasn't eating. But I think that we can prepare for it, you know, that way, and have a buddy and let them know what we might need, you know, have a signal or agree to exchange a few words or a nod of the head that you're taking off somewhere. And
mm-hmm.
yeah. And then maybe sometimes it's, you know, because there's so many people there, and maybe it's a group of people that you're looking forward to seeing. I know for me, I experienced my first re-entry into a big group of people, and I became so overwhelmed I fell asleep.
Yeah.
I just sat down and I was so overwhelmed I just fell asleep sitting right up in a crowd. But I think that if you make a list, let's say, of some people that you really want to touch base with, and not make it a long
mm-hmm.
list, like say three people you want to touch base with, and then make that your assignment. You know, I'm going to go and say hi to Sue and John and, you know, and Mary at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you have a psychological, you have a sense of achievement when you've done those things.
Yeah.
And you also feel organized, like you don't feel overwhelmed by everywhere. So when, you know, Cindy comes up to you, you need to talk to Mary. So you can say to Cindy, well, I'd love to talk to you. It's great to see you, but I've got to go find Mary, you know?
Uh-huh, yeah.
And having a plan of sorts, you know, and keeping it small you know, not a big long list of things that you're going to do.
Right, because we want to decrease the overwhelmingness of everything. You don't want to, you know, increase yourself on that. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Good, there's some good ideas there.
Just a game plan is really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you don't get knocked off balance.
Yeah, and those are the kind of little things that when people don't necessarily think about them, but when they hear someone saying it, like you just gave, you know, some ideas there, they can implement them. They can say, oh, yeah, I could do that. That would be just exactly what I need to do, you know, and maybe you wouldn't think of it. I didn't think of something like that, and yet that was something that was on the top of your brain to tell us because you already knew it was going to help. So those are the kinds of things that we're good for here, just to pass these little things out. It doesn't have to be anything earth-shaking, but it can be earth-shaking for somebody that says, aha, that will work for me. So that's good. I'm going to go back to one of my social media friends again. Katie says that when things get too loud and raucous, and we touched on this before, but I wanted to bring this up, that so she said when things get, you know, overwhelming for her or too loud at family gatherings, she has to excuse herself. And I think that's a great idea, and that's what you just brought up too. And having the little clue to somebody if you need help in doing that is good too. But maybe slipping into a quiet room, closing your eyes and recharging, and taking a bit of time for yourself. You know, put everything back, all the noise and the pandemonium going on in the other room, and just relax a little bit. But then Katie said, there's a double-edged sword here. So she wants to get away. She wants to go, you know, take some time for herself. But then she said that she usually feels guilty for not being with the family, and then the depression sets in. And that seems a high price to pay for Katie, I think. So balance is the key word. And, you know, so how do you, whatever you do whatever you can to make yourself feel better. So I think in Katie's situation, she knew she needed to get away. And she has to give herself the grace to be able to do that because, you know, she should come first. You know, she has to take care of herself first at this point. And then she can probably, you know, regroup pretty quickly and go back. And if she can't, she still, you know, it's not, her family should be able to understand. I think that's what it is. And again, I think it's the teaching the family what you're about your needs. I think they have, you know, you have to have communication so that the family knows that Katie's not trying to be rude. She's not just leaving the party because she doesn't want to see all the different family members there. She's doing it because it's in her best medical interest. There's Debbie, and we touched on that, so I'm not going to go into that so much more, but Debbie says that she uses earplugs when the noise gets to be too much. And she also uses breathing techniques to help calm herself down when she feels anxious. And I think both of those strategies are really good because you can easily affect or change your environment on your own. And I admit, I use breathing techniques when I become overwhelmed. You know, it's amazing how such a little action can help to change your disposition. And I'm just talking about when I'm frustrated. I might be late getting to the theater, and I know I'm supposed to be there, and I'm stopped by a train, and I can't get across the tracks. And this is a hypothetical situation because I don't have to go across any tracks to get to my theater. But you can understand that if you're sitting there and the train is going, chugging along slowly and you know you're late, that you could get very upset. So if you do take that time to just take some deep breaths, focus on yourself, focus on your breaths, and it will calm you a lot better than sitting there and just pounding the steering wheel, which is what most people would want to do. Kim also says that her family pretty much knows that she doesn't do well in big crowds or with noise anymore. So she's allowed to escape to someplace quiet if her family is having a gathering. And that's really great that Kim's family is so supportive of her needs. And I wonder how she got her family to understand. I think more survivors need to know Kim's trick. And I think basically Kim's trick is communication. What are your thoughts, Gail, on that? Do you have any secrets that you use when you become overwhelmed if you're in a big group?
Well, I give myself permission to be myself and to put my oxygen mask on first, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
And I consider my brain injury now to be a gift in many ways because it's made me more self-aware and more confident to do what I need to do for me. So I encounter people every day who don't understand a brain injury, and it used to frustrate me, and now I allow myself to just tell myself, well, too bad for them. And it's not my job all day long to explain to people or educate them unless I'm in a forum for that. You know, so I guess my secret is that I've gotten comfortable with being uncomfortable with certain people's reactions, and I know it's their reaction, and it has nothing to do with my worth as a human being.
Good. Really good. You know, that's and that's not an easy thing to accomplish because people often, you know, if someone doesn't understand them, they feel less of a person because of it. They feel that they're to blame because of it. You know, so I think it's a strong point for you to have come to terms with that, saying, this is me, and take me as I am, because this is the real, you know, me. And if you like me, good. And if you don't, well, then move on. I think that's
how
a strong way to be. Well,
I mean,
yeah,
isn't that how our life is, with or without a brain injury? I mean, we need to be ourselves. So,
exactly.
So those who want to understand will, and those who don't won't. And that happens for people with and without brain injuries. So,
yeah. And you can – go ahead. I'm sorry.
So it's just it has a way of cutting the wheat from the chaff, as they say. You know, so – now it's more when someone gets me, they really get me, and when they don't, that's fine too, you know. And doesn't make them a bad person, doesn't make me a bad person. It's just life. That's all.
Yeah, I think you're so right. You know, and it's something I wish the teenagers could understand and come to terms with it earlier on. Because I remember, you know, growing up as a teen, it's hard. You know, you want to be liked by all your peers. You want to be in the in group, and so sometimes you compromise your own self to allow that to happen. And I think with age and maturity, and it took a heck of a lot of years for me to get to this point, but it's like I'm saying, I don't care anymore. I'm me. If you like me, great. We can probably have a great relationship. If you don't like me, then I don't need you in my life. You know, because I just don't. There is not much, you know, there's too many things going around here that you can be happy about. And I'm going to look for the positive in my life. And I think that's something that maybe it does take some of us longer to learn that, but I think it's an important thing to learn. And I think for a brain injury for a person who is living with a brain injury, they have to realize that they have great value, no different than what they had even before. You know, they're not a lesser person because they have disabilities or because they don't clearly as they did before or they can't walk as well as they did before. You know, you've got to look at the person. You know, this is what I like. Okay, I'm going to go into this. This is what I like. I always tell David, I wish I were just a brain. I don't need my body for anything because I really don't. I'd rather just be a brain, okay? Floating around or whatever. But the thing is, I have met so many people online that I have never met before, you included, And yet we connect. And why? Because it's our brain. It's our thinking. We're not putting any other kinds of things involved in this. Some people I have never even seen a picture of, and yet I feel very, very close to them because we've connected through conversation and communication. And I think that is what we have to think about. You know, it's just be your best and move on with it. I don't know if that made sense.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. So anyhow, I'm going to move on to a little bit of a different aspect here. I wanted to go over, and I'm probably going to do a whole show on these. I've only picked up a couple of them for tonight's show. But brainline.org, there's that thing, folks. Grab a pencil. That's a great website to go to and to find information about brain injury. But brainline.org offers a comprehensive guide to facing the holiday and offers some great survival tips. So I want to talk about some of them in this section of our program here tonight. And I should probably tell everybody, just as a station identification, this is Another Fork in the Road on the Brain Injury Radio Network with your host, Donna O'Donnell-Fragerski, and I'm speaking with my guest, Gail Wakin, who is a survivor of brain injury. And I'm glad you all have been tuned in. So we're going to move on to this other section right now, and I want to talk about prioritizing. And again, this can always be, moved out, be used in any part of your world. But we're going to talk about it in the little box of holidays. So that's really what we're trying to focus on right now. So prioritizing is essential to getting through the holidays. Deciding, and I think, Gail, you mentioned a little bit about this earlier, too. You popped that into one of the things. But deciding on which activities are most important and when the best time to do them helps to ease your stress. I'm better at night. I can accomplish much more than, give a good example, it was in the wee hours of the night last night that I prepped for the show today. So I stayed up till, 2-3 o'clock in the morning working on the show. I finished working on it during the afternoon today. But that's when my mind is going. It's really faster then, and I can work well then. I know a lot of people can't do that, but their best time is during the day. But whatever time is your best time, use that time. Use it to be more efficient. So prioritizing is a good skill that all survivors should employ. And I think that I don't like to use words like should and must, but I do think in this case you should, because it's going to make your life easier. Before David's brain injury, he could go nonstop. But now he must keep a to-do list, and he prioritizes that list to be as efficient and effective as he can, because that is what works for him. Otherwise, he'll be working at a lesser speed, won't get the things done that he needs to do. So I don't know whether, Gail, if you're an early morning bird or a night owl like me, but what are your thoughts on prioritizing the activities during the holidays? And do you have any good suggestions to offer?
Well, I think that prioritizing is freeing. And it's liberating to have a plan. I am an early bird riser. Actually, I get up at 4 every morning. And between 4 and... Yeah, that's when I get my creativity flows early in the morning. And then around 9 o'clock, then I start entering the real world. And and by, noon or 1, I've put in a full day. And then I have time at the other end of the day to get errands. And for things when it interrupts me, I feel good that I've gotten a body of work done in the morning. So with the holidays in mind, I think there's always invitations to attend gatherings, parties, family events. So you know there's, you know, let's say two family events you always do, and you know that you've been invited to, you know, this one big party. And I think it's important to decide what you want to do, what you're willing to do. And all of us in our recovery trajectory are somewhere where we either invite all three of those things, or we know we're only going to be able to do one of those and have fun mm-hmm. doing it. So I think, you know, you need to decide which one of those it is, if any, if all of them or any of them, and then make a plan for how you're going to attend each one. And, you know, maybe the mm-hmm. plan is, well, I'll go to the big party, but I'm only going to stay 45 minutes. And however you have to arrange for that, you know, the person you're going with knows you're going to leave in 45 minutes. The person who's having the party knows that you're coming despite, you know, your inability to really stay a long time, but you're making an effort. Mm-hmm. They'll be happy that you're making the effort. And then you won't feel badly about leaving 45 minutes in, and you can just leave and feel mm-hmm. good about it. So having the plan, the prioritizing, I agree with you. It's very important.
Okay, great. You know, and yes. And so the other thing I wanted to bring up too, we seem to be doing a lot of P words today, prioritizing, plan, pacing is the next one. Pacing yourself and setting reasonable goals help to lower stress. And you just mentioned that, pacing yourself by going to that party and staying 45 minutes because you know that's what you can do. So that's pretty much pacing yourself. And Christina is another friend of mine on social media. All these people I've never met in person but have gotten to know pretty well online. It's really cool. But Christina is a caregiver, and she's had some funny stories. I've had her on, and she's talked to me about some of them, but they're really funny with her husband. But she's the caregiver, so she is keeping a careful eye on things around her house. And she says that she and her husband take one day at a time. She says that she and her husband go shopping together, but they go off at off times. So they don't go at 5 o'clock when everybody who's getting off work is running to the grocery store and the lines are a mile back down the aisles. So they go at off times when it's not so busy at the stores, which is good thinking. That's good thinking for anybody, frankly. But planning shorter shopping trips can also keep things more sane, especially at this time of the year. Pacing is a skill that David has begun to employ. He's realized that he must not only prioritize, but he must also pace himself, because by mid-afternoon, he's not working as efficiently as he once was, and especially in the morning when he's much more fresh. So he chooses to do jobs that take less cognitive attention later in the day. So he's still working, but it's more passive work, such as, well, it's not really passive, but he's searching. He's doing more research, I guess, at that time. He's searching out publishers for my new book, If I Ran the School, A Play Yard for Learning. So, yeah, folks, look for that one coming up, hopefully sometime in the near future. Hopefully in this lifetime. But anyhow, he watches TED Talks that teachers give, looking for possible endorsers of my book and stuff like that, things that don't take the real heavy cognitive strain on his brain, such as editing, because he is my major, he's my editor, he's my manager. He makes sure that all these things are working for me so that I can get out and so that I can do the writing part. And so that's one of the things to pacing. So we talked a little bit about pacing, Gail, and you find that a necessary skill as well, don't you? Prioritizing, planning, pacing.
Absolutely. That's what my days are. And I, like David, you know, like to get the heavy lifting done early in the morning so that the rest of the day opens up for other things that don't require that focus or that concentration. And for me to be doing this, you know, right now, it's 9 what, 35 in Eastern Daylight Time. So usually I'm in bed by now because I'll get up at 4 in the morning. So this is my heavy lifting right now. And it's actually, you know, something that I believe has helped me to improve my cognitive abilities is by pushing myself. You know, when I don't feel like doing something, it's tiring.
Uh-huh.
But it's like lifting weights, actually. So, you know, it's not fun when you're doing multiple reps, you know, and the weights start to feel heavier and heavier. But you make gains and your muscles get stronger. And I think that's what happens with my brain when I push myself like I'm doing right now. I'll sleep soundly tonight, and I'll wake up feeling great. And there was a time, though, when if I had done this, I would have slept, you know, clear through the 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, 10, 8.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I would be extremely tired, but I don't expect that will be the case.
Okay, I
so,
hope not.
it's a balancing act, and you've said balancing. So.
Yeah, it is a balancing act. And I have just one more thing I'm going to be able to get in. We're not going to finish everything I planned. I could have gone to bed at 1 o'clock instead of so late. But anyhow, again, you know, it's what you do. You do what you need to do. But we're talking about, we got that planning in, but we're also going to pull in organizing. And that's the key to making life easier and more manageable. Making lists and checking them twice helps to keep me on target. Lists can serve two purposes. Well, they can probably serve a lot more than that, but they can help to keep you organized. Then they can also give you a sense of accomplishment as you cross off the completed tasks. Organizing the list helps to visually see what tasks are most important. Now, David and I do this in two different ways. He does his to-do list, and as soon as he finishes the task, he'll get rid of it. He won't see it anymore. I'm not going to do that. I want to see it. So my lists go on and on and on. But I have a system. When it's done, it turns green. It means it's over. It's done. And it's dated when it got done. But I can see everything that I've done. So I've got pages and pages and pages of lists that are completed. And again, just as many pages, well, not as many, but lots of pages of to-do things that I still have to do. But I don't like to cross them off and not see them. I like the satisfaction of being able to see what I have accomplished. And that's a prerogative, a personal prerogative. I mean, he just feels more comfortable with just getting rid of it, not having to see it there anymore. But I like it the other way. So I'm going to go back to Christina again, because she said that she writes out small lists of things that she and her family need to do daily. And I think Christina's key word is small. Do things in small chunks. Make short lists, and you will see accomplishments. Make a long list, and you will become overwhelmed and frustrated. And, you know, wait a minute. I probably should take my own advice, because I do just keep making my list of, you know, things go on it. But I try to do, even as it's going longer, I know that my list should be, you know, I know it should be an arm length. My list is already that, my list goes on and on and on, and it's, I call it my, you know, it's as long as my leg at this point, because it's that long. But it seems that each day, as I try to tackle something on my list, two or more things come in that are even more important than the ones that are already there. And the list grows and grows. And I don't see the improvement, which for me causes frustration and upset. Okay, for example, I'll give you an example. On Monday this week, I planned to sort and pay the bills. Then I wanted to file them. Those bills are paid. They've been sitting there for a while. It's the mail stuff, and they're not overdue, but I know they're coming, you know, so it's haunting me there. I know that their due dates are coming, and I have to get them done, and I need them out of my way because every day I think, oh, my God, I've got to do the bills. Oh, God, I've got to do the bills, and they're not getting done. So they're still there. They're still there today even, and this has been a priority every day. And they're paid, but they're not filed. Now, why? Because of the more important things that I just told you that come in. So it was a good thing, though, that took over this bills. And I received an email I think it was on Monday or something, or over, I don't know when it was, earlier this week. I received an email accepting an article from an editor, accepting an article submission that I had sent out some months ago. The editor loved my work, and he said he's going to publish my article with a photo of David and me in the next issue, and the magazine is called The Challenge. It's an online and a print magazine, and it's published by the Brain Injury Association of America. It's called BIAUSA. That's another good site, folks. Write that URL down. It's another great site to get lots of great information. In fact, I reference them a lot because when I want to prepare shows, I get a lot of my information from them. So BIAUSA.com. So I say, yay. I immediately had to take care of that business. So yeah, that's why the bills are still sitting there, not filed. It was good. That's a good one, though. That's a good one. But, you know, the thing is, the idea is the things just keep coming. They just don't stop for you to get them done. And so you're going to have to, that's where that prioritizing comes in. I plan to do it. I had myself organized, ready to do it. But, you know, sometimes, you know, you've heard best laid plans. They get thrown out sometimes. And for this one, at least it was a good throw out, you know, at least I was able to get something really great out of it. So anyhow, I'm not sure I should be offering the advice here because seriously, small lists really do help. But if you keep a running tally and cross off the things that you accomplished, for me anyhow, that gives me the satisfaction of seeing all the cross outs and seeing all my accomplishments. So anyway, I do hope that you will all see my article. It's called Caregiving, All the World's a Stage. And what I did was I took my my theater experience, as I'm a stage manager for our local community theater here, and we actually have a play coming up, so if you're in the area, that would be in Phoenix area. It's called The Curious Savage, and we open on Thursday night. So we're open for the weekend. So anyhow, that's really fun. But I took my play experience and wrote it for caregivers. David was the star of the show. I am his supporting actress, and we had tons and tons of I was his leading lady. Forget that supporting actress bit. And then we had tons of supporting actors, his brothers, his friends, all that kind of stuff, and then related it all to how I'm doing caregiving. So anyhow, I just wanted to pull that in right away, and we're actually running out of time, and I don't think anyone's coming in after me tonight, but I can't be sure. So I'm probably going to have to quit on time. So anyway, Gail, do you have any comments, quick comments about organization, time management?
My quick comment is I'm in total agreement with your suggestion and summation that organization is freeing. It relieves us from stress. And in your instance, your ability to see your accomplishments provides you with a less stressful environment and outlook, and that's great. For me, I'm with David. I just prefer to have it off my plate because then it's cluttering my head. But you and my daughter have a lot in common. She makes little boxes in front of everything she's doing, and then she puts an X in the little box in front of it. And it's really fabulous to look at her list. They're works of art. And I think it's great. I think it works.
Yeah, no, I just color mine because I'm doing it on the computer. I color it and I put the date that it's completed. But if I had a paper list, I would be putting little hearts or little stars like I did for my kids when I was teaching first grade. Okay, you finished that one. Little star. That's what I would do if I was doing paper and pencil one. So, yeah. So, anyhow, I have to thank you, Gail, so much for coming in tonight and chatting with me. It was really a lot of fun. Again, folks, if you want to learn more about the Awaiten, W-A-I-T-K-U-N, please go to my website, Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury, to learn more about her on Survivors Speak Out. You can also find out more about her at her website, and I may have to ask you this. I'm looking very, very fast in my notes, but I'm not sure I can find it fast enough. But her books, honey, I'll look up her books.
I sent them in,
Heal Your
in a messenger to you.
No, I know what they are. I just Heal Your TBI and Heal Their TBI. And I'm not even reading that. That's not in my, I mean, as I know it's in my notes, but I can't find my notes there.
Thank
but
you.
Anyhow, yeah. So Heal Your TBI and Heal Their TBI. So yeah, find, there it is. I found it. And so, and you can find Gail's, and I think this is still correct. HealYourTBI.com is your website. True?
That is true. Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. Perfect. Then please check Gail out. And if you want to learn more about her, because she, and you'll hear her again, I'm sure, when she comes back to be a panelist on the show again next year. So on that note, I do have to say goodnight, everybody. And don't forget to check out Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale. It's the holidays, and you could pass that book out to everybody in your on your list. And you can get it really cheap as an ebook. So go do it, please, and write a review. Okay, that's all I have to say for tonight, folks. I'm going to say have a good holiday, but I'm going to see you again in 2 weeks anyhow before the, well, some of the holidays already begin. So if whatever holiday you're celebrating, have a good one. All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks, Gail. Good night, Gail.
Thank you. Good night, Donna.